Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who's been cut up from the buttock. It's Richard Herring. Thank you very much. Hello, my finest friends. Welcome to another edition of Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. Though I was talking to a bloke in a McLaren orange sports car who tried to... He was on the drive up. This is what I wanted to talk about today. I've never seen a McLaren sports car actually on the road before. It's quite exciting. It's a very expensive car. And I pulled up alongside him, and then he got ahead of me, and he was sort of weaving between the traffic. And then I saw him get into an argument with the driver in front of me, and he tried to drive him off the road and was trying to have a fight with him, but the other driver carried on, so he just called him a wanker out the window. After another van driver called me a bastard after he'd cut me up as well. I've been cut up a lot. Anyway, both of those people call it Rahalastma. So they're cool. They've got sports cars. I've driven into London for the last... I'm on the wrong side. I have to tell you, I'm on the wrong side. My guest this week has insisted on going on my side. Just playing mind games. She likes to fuck people up. And it is weird. It is working. I'm intimidated. But it's really weird me being on this side, isn't it? It's wrong. It's deeply wrong, but I'm going to enjoy it anyway because, you know, I'll do whatever this guest tells me. That's a promise. That was in my marriage vows. So, what was I saying? Oh, I've driven in three days in a row to London, and people have been either throwing themselves in front of my car or just driving. I've been a very good driver. Again, my guest said it was probably me, but it wasn't me. It was it's everyone else's being bad, and I've saved the life of everyone. I guess, you know, there's a lot of people who are tired of London and thus tired of life in London at the moment because it's noticeable. Something weird's going on, I'm telling you. It's like some nights in Edinburgh, all the audiences are the same wherever you go. Everyone says, we had a terrible audience. Something's going down in London at the moment. There's a big moon, isn't there? There's a big red moon at the moment. That will explain it. Anyway, thank you very much for coming, everybody. If you're listening at home or if you're here, indeed, we've got loads of fantastic gigs coming up here at the Leicester Square Theatre. Go to richherring.com/Rahalastapa. Thank you. And you can see fantastic guests are coming up. Do come along. It's fantastic when we get a nice big audience in here, and we are booking some brilliant guests, and it's going on into 2023. We started booking up gigs as well, so do that. And please do buy my book, Can I Have My Ball Back? I had a copy of it. Chris Evans, not that one, has stolen it, and I can't hold it up. It's good, though, so it'll be out for you people here. It's out next week for you people at home. It's been out for ages. Why haven't you bought it yet? This week it was the Tory party conference. Liz Truss, the Prime Minister at the time of recording, said in a speech that she wants what I want, and that disgusts me. I have to tell you that if that is... I don't think she should be allowed to be Prime Minister with that sort of stuff going on in her head. Though I have to say, and I've said this on my other podcast, but I no longer fancy Priti Patel because she's not got the power. It's the power I like. I used to fancy Priti Patel. But now I really like Suella Deville, is that Suella Braverman? I just like them. The more evil they are, it's Suella Braverman, the Queen, the Borg Queen, I like, and Servalan from Blake 7. That's for the... There'll be some older people in who'll get that reference. But once they lost their power, I'm not interested. But, you know, when she goes on about just dreaming of deporting refugees. Okay, let's move on. The first two are all right because they're fictional, right? But then it's not right if it... No. It's fine. We'll be all right. They can't be in for much longer. My guest this week, who's sitting in my chair, is probably best known for her appearance on Roland Rat, the TV series. That's why we're here. That's what she's known for. Will you please welcome the incredible Annika Rice, ladies and gentlemen. It's Annika Rice. Annika Rice, there she is. Have my chair.
What a very fine chair on this side I seem to have. Thank you.
Well, lovely to have you. Lovely to meet you in the flesh. We talked last year online.
Online.
And then after that we did a podcast together. Bang, bang. can you tell us about Roland Rat? Do you remember working with Roland Rat? Do you remember it?
No, I do. Yeah, I do remember it. I was there. but I don't remember anything about Roland Rat.
What was he like in real life?
It was just weird because the guy in real life was kind of rodent-like as well. And he'd sit under the counter or under the sofa or wherever it was. And it was difficult for your eye line not to flip between the two and wonder which way round it was. It was just very surreal, Roland Rat. Thank you for bringing that up.
That's all right.
my scene with Roland Rat.
You'd remember that.
Yeah.
This is a very quick return, Annika. You were only on, it turns out, like about 16 months ago. It feels like it was at this end of second lockdown and some things have happened to me this year.
Yeah, you just lost a ball.
I just lost a ball.
So we literally spent half an hour talking about his ball, which was...
It's almost like I'd engineered the whole thing, wasn't it?
I felt like Nurse Ratchet by the end of it.
So I'm all right. We don't have to talk about it now. But I thought, well, you know, we talked about everything, but there's so much to talk about still. You've done so much, even since last year. We're not going to talk much about Challenge Annika. We're sure it will come up, but all the other things we talked about. But I've just been listening on the way up. When I wasn't being nearly killed by people.
When you weren't being apprehended by police.
I didn't do anything wrong. And you told me you've been arrested, so, you know. Do you want to tell us about being arrested?
What was that story?
You just told us just now backstage.
I can't remember.
You can't remember. You get arrested very often, Annika.
Yeah. Which story was it?
It was about airport security.
Yes. I was thinking of a car offence. I was thinking, genuinely, I don't think I've been arrested in a car. Yeah, no, I was at Dubrovnik Airport in Croatia, and the day before I'd been with my kids and we'd had a lovely tour. This lovely university professor had singled us out and said, I would like to take you on a tour of our city. So we said, lovely. We got on really well. We took him out for lunch. And then at the end, he said, as a token of my admiration for you as a fine mother and your wonderful boys, I would like to give you this. And it was a bullet, a Kalashnikov bullet from the Homeland War, because we've been talking about that. And I said, lovely. Popped it in my handbag. Thought no more about it. Got to the airport. Bloody arrested. Literally taken away from my children. Bye. And I was going to say backstage, but, you know, insecurity at the airport. And the woman It was a luckily it was a woman who'd come to frisk me and do all that. And she said, "Do you know what? It's bloody Sunday. You're lucky it's Sunday because we all want to go home. Off you go." So had it been Monday, I possibly could be still there in a prison.
Wow. Yeah. Did they let you keep the bullet?
No, they took the bullet. And if I ever find that man...
And they didn't check? They didn't check
do you
your...
Do you think he did it on purpose? Do you think he hated us? Having said he loved us, he hated us so
was
much.
Was it a live round or a...
A live, yeah.
Yeah, he definitely hated you.
He did,
I think maybe he was in love with you and wanted you to stay in the country. And then he could...
The
probably
funny
had some
thing
room.
Is, we actually did a challenge in Croatia and I have a very noble, wonderful memory of filming during just after the Homeland War. And, and while we were doing the challenge, we literally had Serb gunmen trained on us, snipers in the hills, and we had to be protected by the United Nations. So that time as well, I thought I was going to die.
Right.
So it's something about me in Croatia.
And you know, you're travelling the world to dangerous places.
Dangerous.
It's going to happen. But I was listening in the car to your fantastic Radio 4 series, Annika Has Issues, because you've become a stand-up comedian. We talked about this a little bit, but you are now a stand-up comedian. You've done at least two actual full-on stand-up shows.
Yeah.
And this series is...
I've been on tour with Lucy Porter to Guernsey. Okay, it was just a one venue. But I loved being away with Lucy Porter. I mean, we just... Oh, God, I love it. It's so... It's great. I mean, it's a bit weird sitting down, isn't it, in a way? We could stand up and do this.
We can do it.
Especially since you're bitter that I've taken your chair.
I'm just confused. Yeah. You can interview me.
No, it started because I did a Radio 4 thing called My Teenage Diary. Has anyone ever listened to that? It's really lovely. You take along your teenage diaries, and mine particularly are just mental. And I sat here with my diaries, and, you know, the audience was laughing hysterically because they were very funny. And I just sort of really enjoyed that connection with the audience.
Yeah.
It's really great to go... Hello, how are you? You know, how nice to see you all. And so it started from there. I just thought, So I wrote some comedy.
Yeah.
And Radio 4 have been obligingly putting them out and whatever.
Well, it's very, you know, we get a lot about you. You're a perfect stand-up comedian. You're very willing to talk about your life and your personal life. And that's what this show's all about. It's Annika Has Issues. And so you choose a subject each week where you have issues about family or death, which is quite interesting.
Alzheimer's was an absolute roar of a laugh.
The Alzheimer's one is funny. You talk about Captain Dick in the Alzheimer's one.
Captain Dick. Oh, my God. Has anyone else had an experience like this? Wow. Oh, dear.
It sounds worse than it is.
You know those children's parties where you really try and go the extra mile for your child? So I booked Captain Dick. And the idea was that Captain Dick would take my son and his lovely schoolmates round Richmond Park in London and take them on jolly japes and, you know, make a fire perhaps and then come back all flushed with excitement and pretty exhausted, and I'd have a groaning picnic laid out for them. So that was the premise. So Captain Dick took the class off for jolly japes in the Bracken and came back for the picnic, and it was only then that I realised that Adam was missing. So I have a child who is missing in Richmond Park, and this isn't like a municipal park where you can see the edges. It's 2,500 acres, and there are rutting deer and a lot of lakes, and Adam was missing, and one thing you do not ever want to be is known as the mother who loses children. So I had to go and find this child, and I did find him eventually sobbing in the bracken. He just had too much of Captain Dick and was just all over it. And I brought him back to the picnic rug, and I then had 1 hour to reset Adam's mind. Honestly, it was the biggest challenge I've ever done. 1 hour before his mum came, that I had to persuade him that he'd had the best bloody time at this party ever. So I was shaking. My poor son didn't get a look in Edgar. I didn't look at him for the rest of the party. I gave him all Josh's presents. I said, "You take your pick, because you did so well in the Bracken. What would you like?" Anyway, and I brainwashed him for a whole hour. And by the time his mum came, Adam had truly had the best party ever. And when I helped, and my poor son Josh just looked as all his presents were being opened by bloody Adam. By the time Adam's mother came, little Adam was absolutely thrilled, and I helped them into the car. And I said to Adam's mum, "Oh, he's been a joy. What an adventurous little soul he is." And she said, "Oh, that's really weird, because usually when he goes to a party, he hides and cries." So,
but see, you talk about you reveal that on the road. Presumably, I mean, it must obviously was a little while ago, I suppose. But
yeah, otherwise Captain Dick will be suing.
Well, I can't believe you took that on yourself rather than Captain Dick being in trouble for losing a child, which is that's the first rule of being a
yes. Well, it was back in the day. You didn't ever blame anyone else but yourself. You know, you wear your hair shirt, don't you, as the mother? Yeah. It's your fault if a child is.
Adam's mum has presumably now heard about this and might then and maybe put two and two together, even if you changed the name.
I never spoke to that family again. He never came to another party. And I hate his mother. And poor Josh. And poor Josh had no presents. We went home in stony silence. Yeah.
But, you know, you are covering big issues in it. You're such a sympathetic and empathetic person, and you're so interested in all these things. It is, you talk about death, and you're very funny about your own plans for what you want for your own ashes, and the fact you've got your parents' ashes as well.
Well, you can do so much now with your body, which is what I've discovered, having become a bit of an expert on death. And I always remember, back in the day, you just had a coffin and it was very boring, but now it seems you can just do anything at all. Carrie Fisher, the actress, when she died, she had her coffin in the shape of a Prozac pill. And I was doing the Radio 2 breakfast show at the time, and I did a sort of poll with the audience, and the audience, you know what Radio 2 audiences are like, they seized on this subject, and by the end I had a list as long as my arm of brilliant options for coffins. But I thought for mine, I just wanted to have something blue because I love the colour blue. Everything in my life is coloured blue. And obviously it's got to be sort of long and blue. And I just thought for ages. And then the only thing I could think of that was long and blue is the Challenge Annika truck. So this was perfect. And, you know, also what I'm doing when I leave this world, I'm leaving my children with a bit of a challenge because they've got to create the truck and place my body in it.
Well, I think it should be like a Viking burial. It should be the actual truck. The BBC should give you the truck. And you should be buried like in Sutton Hoo under there. And then in 1,000 years' time, someone could dig you up and wonder
what the hell is this small skeleton doing in this sodding great truck. The thing about all these subjects with my Annika Has Issues series is that, you know, they're bittersweet, all these things. You know, death is bittersweet, isn't it?
Yes.
And, you know, it all started off with my thoughts about this was when... Actually, it's the same son, Josh. I do have three sons, but Josh seems to be my favourite tonight. When he was little and you'd ask him what he wanted to be when he grew up, you know, you'd say, what would you like to do? You know, would you like to be an astronaut or whatever? And he'd always get really excited about options. He was only three. And then one day he said, no, I want to go to the office, because he saw me leaving in the morning to go to an office full of joy because I couldn't wait to get out of the door. And so he said, I want to go to the office. And then he just said these few words, but will I know the way? And when you're three, you panic about things like that. Where is the office? What happens when you go out of the front door? It's really... Sorry, I'm quite choked up. It's really scary out there for a small child to think of knowing the way. And that's how the whole death stand-up started, about how we're desperately trying to find our way, aren't we, basically?
Yeah.
Have you found yours? I mean, you're upset that we've even swapped chairs.
Yeah, you know, I was fine when I was on that side of the stage, but now...
You've lost your way.
I'm not sure.
We need Josh saying, but will you know the way?
I think, well, it's very funny. That's what I mean. For someone to come to stand-up later in life, having done so much stuff, A, that's good because you've got so much experience of stuff to talk about. And you really do. I mean, your life is so full, it's unbelievable. But to come to stand-up and then sort of understand implicitly how... what you need to do and to find things, because that's a show for, you know, for us. That's a stand-up show, which it is on the radio, but you could take that show out from that. It's spotting the starting point and going.
Yes. Well, I love writing. I've always loved writing. So, and I write them very quickly. It's not difficult for me to write them because they are all stories. And, you know, I love the sort of thread. You just go off on an absolute mad adventure, don't you, in your brain.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're... you know, and it's just a really good opportunity to use some of those life experiences, if you like, because, like, you know, being quite ancient now, I've lived through a lot of life, covered, ticked most boxes, I can tell you. So, you know, why not talk about them?
Sure.
But in a funny way. And I now get when comedians... What, they hide behind humour, don't they, in a way?
We absolutely do. We hide.
There's no way that I'd stand up and deliver that as a straight sort of lecturing thing.
No, but it's a great way of treating a serious subject. And it's very philosophical. I've got an emergency question, which I think it's almost redundant to ask you because I think it definitely has. But I have an emergency question about, do you think the picture that will be used in your obituary has been taken yet? Which I think whatever you do in the rest of your life... and I think you'd have to do like a quite extreme terrorist atrocity for it not to be this. Is you in the jumpsuit of either Treasure Hunt or Challenge Annika?
Yeah.
In Lycra.
So I don't even bother not wearing a jumpsuit. I mean, I don't even go there because it's like a uniform, isn't it? It was so funny because I posted something on Instagram yesterday, which was a photo I found of me when I was a newsreader. In my very early 20s, I was working as a journalist and a newsreader in Hong Kong. And I'm this very serious young lady in a silk blouse and a little gold chain, unrecognisable to this lunatic that I then became. And it's so interesting for that sliding doors moment, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because I was working as a journalist in Hong Kong and came back to the UK. And I got an agent... for news work, and I was talking to BBC News about potentially being a newsreader, and they were saying, well, you're still a bit young for our audience. And then my agent sent me along on this audition for this helicopter show, and no one knew anything about it. So I was just sent along and met Graham, the cameraman, in Hyde Park, and we had to do a mini treasure hunt. And it was just mad because all the other people auditioning were all Olympic male. They were all male and they were all Olympic athletes. So they shot off, and poor Graham was like 50 cigarettes a day, like, forget that. So when it came to my turn, it was like, oh, and I heard him say to the producer, it's got to be Annie. And I got the job for all the wrong reasons because he could keep up with me. And my life... turned on a sixpence. So I went from being a very serious, sort of sensible person to leaping up and down mountains chased by a panting cameraman. I mean, it's just such a weird thing that happened.
I mean, it is, but I think it seems to me like you're always destined for something to happen. Obviously, this... I read in an interview you said that you'd auditioned before all of this for Animal Magic, which was... some of us will remember that show... and had been the producer had said you wouldn't get anywhere because you had a gap in between your teeth.
I know,
but you don't even have a well. Maybe you did. That producer should be fired because it's a very attractive gap between your teeth if it's there. But B, there's other stuff to Annika Rice. Oh yeah, no one's going to get past the gap in her teeth.
It was very funny that because they took me off. I went off with this man, the producer, to a farm in Wales. And they put me on a tractor. And I had no desire to be in front of a camera. I was doing a news trainee journalism course. Right. And so I had no desire to be whatever this person meant for me to be. And he said, right, okay, we're going to drive the tractor along. And when we get to the post, if you then start talking about the cows. And I'm thinking, what does that even mean? You know. And then I just thought... maybe if I just open my mouth when I get to that post, something will come out. But actually, you have to learn the skill of ad-libbing.
Yeah.
You know, when I was 16, 17 at the time, I hadn't learned the skill of ad-libbing or in front of a camera.
Sure.
And so when he said, you know, you look crap on telly, you're really ugly and you've got a gap between your teeth, I just went, thanks, I have no desire to be on the telly, thank you very much. And went back to my, you know, training, yeah. which I was really enjoying.
Yeah. Well, it's been an incredible thing, and I think where you're the challenge, Annika, especially because you own the format of that, which was canny to know that's still quite young in early in your career where challenge.
Yeah, I was 28 when I wrote that format,
and so you created a format that you've then sold all over the world as well. I don't think I realised that they'd. Maybe I did, but Erin Brockovich did it in
yes,
America.
Yes, I New York ABC did a version with Erin Brockovich being me, and as the exec producer, I had to go to New York and train. Do you know who I mean by Erin Brockovich, the campaigner and activist? Julia Roberts played her famously in a film, but as a person herself, she wasn't a television person at all. You know, she was a bit like me, age 16 on the tractor. She hadn't a bloody clue. And so I had these three very surreal days in Central Park, training her to be a television presenter. So I'd go, right, Erin, you're going to come up to me and ask me for some nails. And she'd go, why? And I know, no, you just do, because probably on the challenge at some point you'll need some kit, nails. And, you know, it was really difficult, off the cuff, just to suddenly do this complete masterclass on television presentation. And then we took her to choose her outfit. And it was a lovely project. It was post 9/11, and it was to create a peace garden for the families of the firemen who'd lost their lives. So it was a really beautiful, beautiful project. Yeah.
I mean, you did a lot of Challenge Annikas, and a lot of them are very worthy and fantastic. And I know you're still very interested in all the projects you created. Did any of them go? Because they were like, it was a genuine thing, wasn't it? So did it? I mean, I'm more interested in failure than success.
Oh, lots of failure.
Did they ever go badly wrong?
They failed a lot, but we showed that. We didn't try and pretend we got to the deadline every time, because that would have just been ridiculous, because they were completely impossible projects mostly. So when we went out to Romania, I had to beg and ask all the volunteers who'd come out to stay an extra 4 days, or for an extra week, I think it was, on that project. No, a lot of the projects, we don't hit the deadline. Right. But it's really difficult. We make the time scale really impossible, like 3 days, because 3 days you can ask people to volunteer. You can ask people to give up their lives for you for 3 days without being paid. Beyond that, it's taking the piss, isn't it?
I think you can do pretty much anything. And it's interesting, you're bringing Challenge Annika back. Have you filmed that already, or is that...
In the middle of it.
Right, you're in the middle of it. And it feels like, because it's such a giving idea and it's such a charitable idea, it's about community coming together and all working, it feels very like a 20th century idea that, like, because society's become so horrible in the last 10 to 15 years. So, but that's a beautiful, that's a wonderful thing that, you know, that you're still able to go out there and do that, and I'm sure still as persuasive.
The most... Very touching thing is that on some projects we've done, an architect or someone will come up and go, who we're working with, and we'll go, oh my God, can I just say that when I was five, you came to our village and created XYZ, and I was a little child, and I met you, and you showed me around your truck, and now I'm the architect on this project. And every project we're doing has got that 30-year history, repeating itself. It's been extraordinary, the connections, because so many people were involved with those projects.
But it's great.
Hundreds and thousands. So,
but I think also people trust you and believe in you. You know, it would be easy to do that show cynically. I mean, you know, Noel Edmonds could do something like it, couldn't he? And it would be... People would be... That's just off the top of my head. And you'd think he doesn't really care about anything other than himself. But with you, so I think, you know, exactly that it's sort of calm, it's like a calmer aspect to it, isn't it? That you do something good 30 years ago and then People will be. I think people would give up a lot more than 3 days for you.
Well, they're having to. Yeah. Is all I can say. They're going on a bit. You know, it's just it's difficult doing it in a recession, which yeah. we're doing it now. It's very different. As you say, it's quite humbling and touching to see the sort of issues we're dealing with now. That
exactly,
you did not think you'd be dealing with 30 years ago. No. It's really interesting. I think it'll be a very interesting series.
And do you think people are still... I mean, that's just... You've got this view of over, 30 years different time. Do you feel people... There's still good in people?
Yeah, totally. I totally believe... I think we are hardwired human beings to be altruistic.
Yeah.
Never. I've never swerved. Don't you agree with that? Oh, God, there's a bit of a silence.
Yeah, my audience
are
very
cynical. Can I just say, the front row are very altruistic. The rest of you...
They hate humanity, these people.
No,
I
don't agree. I think people like to help.
Yeah.
I think it's often very difficult to know how to help because issues we're dealing with now are just so big, you know, it's overwhelming, aren't they? But coming to volunteer on a challenge is like running away to the circus. It's, you know, it's fun, it's exciting. And a lot of companies that we used to work for, you know, big construction companies, they used to beg us to come back and could we do another project because it's so good for team bonding
yeah.
in the company. Richard, you should come. Bring your family.
I'll come and sabotage stuff.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. I've told you I like
let
evil.
Let my tires down.
I like evil women. I don't want someone good like you. What's attractive about that, Anna?
How is your wife?
She sends her love. But you know, I think it also shows that, you know, because it can be overwhelming trying to think, what can I do to make the world a nicer place, which I would like to do. But you know, you just get on with doing the beauty of challenges. You get on with just doing whatever the
just
thing is.
Just little things. They're yeah. just community projects.
I mean, some of them are big things, though.
Mostly they're small community yeah. projects.
Yeah, but you're doing something. You know, it's better to do something rather than nothing, yeah. and you can achieve stuff. It's you know, yeah. and you've. I've been reading about you, and you do this befriending thing with elderly.
Oh, I love my old ladies.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. One's just died, sadly. But Sylvia, who's now 101,
wow.
she'll ring me and go, "Hello, Annika. Do you fancy a pub lunch on Thursday? And we'll just go and have a pub lunch." And, you know, I know I'm a great fan. I'm a great fan of elderly people.
Yeah.
I don't know why I am. I've always sort of slightly felt drawn to them because, you know, we forget that elderly people are us underneath. You know, we're all heading that way.
Of course.
And you tend to see elderly people just as a mass of white-haired people. But, you know, underneath that facade, they are brain surgeons and doctors and teachers and lawyers. And I quite enjoy, you know, tapping into the real them rather yeah. than, you know, just that rather sort of condescending thing we do. Oh, how lovely to see you, 101, amazing, you know.
Would you consider befriending younger people, like 55-year-old men? Because I reckon we could find a few. There's a lot of lonely, I mean, not me, but there's also lots of... Just air could ring you up any time, say, "I'm feeling a bit lonely, can I tell you about my life?"
Can we talk about that? And, you know, somewhere else, but...
You know, just spread it around a bit is what I'm saying, Annika.
Share the love. I'm all for sharing the love.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It's a lovely thing. Let me ask you some. I only asked you a few emergency questions last time. Let's see what I've got for you this time. If Annika Rice, you could go into a chrysalis like a caterpillar and come out as anything that you'd dissolve, and you would no longer be Annika Rice, but you could become Annika Rice again if you wanted, and you can come out as anything you want. A caterpillar chooses to become a butterfly. What would you come out of the chrysalis as?
God, are these emergency questions
always hard? Yeah. But it's to catch you off guard.
I've always wanted to be an elephant.
Okay.
Is that the sort of answer you meant?
Yeah, that's good.
Will we gain nature?
No, it could be anything you want, and that's what's.
I find elephants rather noble and wonderful. Yeah. Yeah. I quite like the thought of, and also being in a family of elephants, I think, is a truly perfect small community.
Good, and imagine all the things you could be really helpful
you could
on a challenge.
Trample on people.
You could lift up bricks and stuff.
Could do that. Yeah. I was thinking more of living actually, you know, in Africa.
So if you were an elephant, you wouldn't help people, is what you're saying?
No. Okay. No.
You'd like to be an elephant that
I'd just
hates
be within
humanity.
My own community.
Yeah, I'd like to be an
trampling
elephant that
on others.
On
yes.
Good. I'm very glad to hear it. I think I asked you if you'd ever seen a ghost. So I'm not going to ask you that again.
Ghosts, yes. Lots of ghosts in my life.
I think you've heard a ghost. I think you'd heard a ghost. Let me ask you something else. Are you proud of yourself?
No, I'm not actually. I mean, I know that's not the sort of answer you're meant to give. You're meant to sort of go, well, actually, you know. And it sounds like false modesty, but I'm not particularly. No.
But you've done so much. I mean, if anyone could be proud of themselves,
no,
you
I'm not.
Be proud
no,
of
no, no, because you, no, no. There was that time I killed someone.
You can be forgiven.
I ran someone over in Hong Kong, let's face it, didn't I?
Okay, yes, that's true.
I didn't kill
them.
They
didn't die, though.
They didn't die at all. They just sort of splattered down the windscreen slightly. Well, I was going 5 miles an hour and this person was high on whatever you get high
on. What do you think, Drew? Because it seems like, again, listening to your show and hearing a few interviews with you, you had a difficult and an interesting family upbringing, and you were sort of the parent in the family even as a kid, and you had some issues with your parents, which you resolved, I think, in later life. Is that what pushed you towards...
Well, I think Jeopardy is really useful.
Yeah.
And I think I'm always saying to my kids as a parent, I'm really worried there's not enough fear and Jeopardy in your life. So I used to pretend to them we were really impoverished, even though we lived in quite a big house. But they didn't notice that at the time. But it was just, you know, and they remember, you know, sort of not having the heating on a lot of the time, because I grew up in a very weird family where it felt like the rug was constantly being pulled from under my feet. Mm-hmm. And so I just had no security at all, literally no security. So I suppose, you know, if you say I'm doing this for sort of communities, I just want to sort of pour love and security onto other people, you know, because I didn't have it myself. And but I also... I think that jeopardy you feel as a small child when you don't quite know what's going to be happening the next day isn't a bad thing, because I definitely wouldn't have done anything if I was a confident, you know, a teenager. I just did stuff because I had to escape.
It's sort of interesting, but then again, a lot of people would take the negative from that experience and sort of go the other way and be unpleasant to people. So for you to go through something and...
Well, I just thought, well, you know, fuck, what have I got to lose? And so I was never frightened of anything.
Right.
Not frightened of anything. I just thought, well, I just did things that were quite extreme. And I look back and I look at my younger self and think, bloody hell, you know. But I just didn't care. Because if you don't think anyone's looking out for you, why do you care?
Yeah. I mean, it's fascinating. And it really is. And the way you really do throw yourself into something. Even just doing stand-up comedy, most people, that's their absolute worst
terror.
Nightmare.
But you see, I love the terror.
Yeah.
Love it. I really am unsettled when everything's going really well. So everything I've done in life, and it started with, when I was working as a journalist at the BBC and I went out to Hong Kong and worked as a newsreader, and I only worked as a newsreader because I was actually one of the sub-editors and writing the scripts, and the newsreader was ill. And I went, oh, I'll have a go at that. I used to do that at the BBC, complete lie. I'd been on a tractor in a farm and told I was shit and shouldn't ever go near a camera. So I did, you know, that's a real example of just throwing myself out there.
Yeah.
But it's worth throwing yourself out there a lot like a splatter gun, because something will stick that suits you.
I think if you're a certain type of personality, maybe. I think it's a great way to live your life, and most people don't live their life that way.
Yeah.
And most people, it's like improv in life. Yes. It's like going, whatever's thrown at you, you'll go with it.
Jim Sweeney and Steve Steen.
Yeah.
Well, do you know them?
Yes, do you?
Well, I've never said this before, but I owe a lot to them, because when I first came back from Hong Kong, before I found the helicopters with no doors and the panting cameraman, I worked on a children's program called CBTV with those two.
Yeah.
And we did improv the whole time.
Right.
And we developed comedy.
Yeah.
That's what we did. We did little sketches throughout the program. And so, I'd forgotten about them.
Well,
they were great.
I remember that show. I don't remember you being on the show.
Do you remember that show?
Yeah, because I really loved them, and as I still do.
Yeah.
They're both fantastic men and fantastic comics. And brilliant improvisers. CBTV, Channel 1-4.
That's it, yeah. And so the producer would send us off to Paris or to the miners' strike or, you know, weird sort of, he'd just throw us in situations.
Right.
And the three of us would just make something up. And we all had our roles. They were the sort of hapless duo. And I was the slightly sort of scathing person. I don't know. I was sort of Lady Penelope in Thunderbirds. I don't know. That was how we sort of rumbled it together. And they were funny.
Yeah.
You know, they were funny little sketches. And that's how you learn, isn't it?
Yeah.
You do loads and loads of silly things like that.
Yeah.
And eventually it sticks and you think, oh, I can do... That's fun, doing comedy.
Yeah. I mean, you don't get anywhere if you don't do stuff. And if you try stuff, then stuff can happen.
Yeah.
I mean, you quote it in the radio show from A.A. Milne, Piglet was so excited at the idea of being useful that he forgot to be frightened anymore, which I think sort of sums up.
That literally sums up me, Piglet. Because it's so true. You know, if you're, bloody terrified of stuff, if you suddenly become useful, if you throw yourself into a bigger picture, if you become part of something way bigger than yourself, the fear goes.
Yeah.
It just does. Piglet is such a philosopher.
And I think the thing about you as well is you still have this quality of innocence, even though one suspects that underneath you're fairly, let's say, adventurous. But like, you know, nobody else would tell that story about Captain Dick and just let everyone else make up their own joke about Captain Dick and make out that you don't understand why that's funny. And that's comedically absolutely brilliant, because it's, you know, it wouldn't be that funny if you made a big thing about it, but why not me? But there's people can listen to that, go, does she not know that Captain Dick sounds quite rude?
But that becomes your device,
yeah. But it's amazing.
That's your thing. That's what you do, and it started with CBTV 1-4. That, you know, I'd be the one that would say the most shocking, filthy, revolting things. But, you know, in a way that everyone was left reeling, thinking, did she mean that? And we did get away with murder.
Yeah, but it's very smart and very clever and very interesting. Anyway, you've been doing Jungian therapy. Who you tried it out.
That's interesting. Has anyone done that? Jungian therapy, it's sort of dream therapy. And if you go and see a therapist, can I just say, I did this years ago, yeah, decades ago, and this was part of one of my stand-up things, talking about different therapies. And what they do, the therapist tells you to go to bed, you know, normally go to sleep, but to keep a pencil and a notebook by your pillow. And then when you wake up in the middle of the night, to immediately write down what you're dreaming, because I'm sure you all know that you forget your dreams in seconds, don't you? I mean, it's impossible to be the dream catcher. And it sounds ridiculous, because you think, by the time I've woken up and got a pen and pencil, that's not exactly spontaneous,
yeah,
your subconscious. It really works, though. And you wake up in the morning, you just go, fuck! Because your subconscious is this really murky place, and it really freaked me out so much I had to stop doing it. I just did not, honestly, it was torture. It was so shocking. And the thought that all that went on in my head without my brain telling me that was going on, I was freaked out by that. Yeah.
What was the worst thing you were dreaming, Annika?
I used to, oh no, I can't even go.
Okay,
no,
you don't have to.
I think it would become a different program.
I'm happy to go very dark.
No, my dream, one of my dreams was that I was trapped in a room with the walls closing in on me and my children were on the other side of the walls.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, told you it wouldn't get a laugh.
Doesn't have to get a laugh.
No, well, you know, but honestly, all our dreams are like that. I'm not saying anything that probably someone else won't dream. A lot of people dream their teeth are falling out.
Yeah.
Have you ever done that?
I don't. The one I always have, which is just annoying because like I have it so often, you'd think I'd remember in the fucking dream that it's always a dream. Yeah. And I'm always like...
But that's it, you don't.
I'm always like, whatever age I am, is just sitting my A-levels or my degree
again.
Oh,
yes.
And so I just, all the, my maths A-level, and I go in and I don't remember anything. I did well in my maths A-level. There's no reason to go back. But now I don't remember anything about how to do maths. I can't even do my daughter's maths homework. And so if you made me do maths, or sometimes it's French, which I didn't even do, you know. So,
I went on a great French exchange once. I was sent off to Paris. My parents barely knew I was going. I think the school arranged it. Anyway, I was 15. So I got myself to Paris somehow. And I had this address and I turned up at the front door. And it's quite imposing, Paris. If I'd never even been on a plane before. I got the train there. And I'd never even been to a restaurant. Anyway, I got to Paris and I knocked on the door expecting to see Madame Levine and her lovely children. And it was just Monsieur Levine. And Monsieur Levine brought me in and he didn't speak any English and I spoke no French at all, as you don't. Do you? Let's face it, when you're learning French at school. And so he showed me to my bedroom and I just had no idea what was going to happen next. I didn't understand anything. There was a bathroom where there seemed some sort of to be some kind of foot cleaning device, which I later found out was the bidet, but it took me many days to work that one out. And anyway, I just wandered around Paris on my own. And there was no way of contacting your parents. I mean, it didn't even occur to me I could ring my parents. I mean, honestly, no one would have been at all interested. So I just kind of hung around Parisian coffee bars, hoping people would buy me a drink. And then in the end, in despair, I just rang my boyfriend in London and told him what had happened. And he came and picked me up in his Alfa Romeo.
Wow.
He was 17, I was 15, and we went off to the south of France and we just drove off with a great roar and I could see Monsieur Levine looking anxiously out of the window. I just went, au revoir, Monsieur Levine! And John and I went off camping in the south of France and got back home 2 weeks later, amazing suntan. Vaguely, my parents said, how's the French? And I went, great, and that was it.
Isn't it usual when you go on a French exchange, there's a child there?
Exactly.
So they go on a French exchange to a man's house.
Exactly. Exactly. That is how weird my life was. I told you the rug was always pulled from under my feet. Even bloody the French exchange pulled the rug from under my feet. Nothing ever went to plan.
You've been on House of Games.
Just remember? Just done the Christmas episode.
Oh, have you done an extra one?
Mm.
Very good. Well, I didn't realise Richard Osman was using it as a sort of dating service. You know, he's marrying one of the contestants.
I know.
And I'm quite annoyed. I've been on it twice and he never never even made a move on me.
No, that is annoying.
I'd like to climb him like a tree. He's a big...
Yeah.
Did you?
No, you're right. I always liked it when I sat very near him.
Yeah.
And hoped
were you flirting?
A slight twinkle. Well, yeah, I was actually. Yeah.
You're right to be married. I'd marry Richard Osman.
Who wouldn't marry Richard Osman?
He's got to have a bit of.
He's doing well, isn't he, with the old books and everything? No, I did it again. The first time I did it, it was ridiculous for the whole week because I had I had finger terror. I couldn't do the buzzer thing in time, but I was on with Al Murray.
Oh yeah,
who's probably the cleverest man ever.
Well, second cleverest.
And Niche.
And who, sorry?
Niche.
Oh, Niche Kumar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who is probably the second most clever person when it comes to a buzzer. And third. So, that wasn't a great success. But all I will say is for the Christmas run, things went a little better.
Oh, good. Well, I'll give you a tip for anyone who's going to... Oh, none of you are celebrities, so you won't be on. If you're on again, I can't remember exactly what it is, but there is an absolute trick to the buzzer.
What?
That's why I did so well, because there's an absolute trick to being when you've got to be the first one to buzz in when someone else hasn't got it, you've got to wait for something happens that indicates that the buzzer's alive again and you've got to be able to spot it. I think it lights up or the light goes off and then you've got to press straight away.
Well, my trick was I just pressed the buzzer.
Right.
And
that's where you went wrong.
And then read... No, the second time round when it was so successful.
Yeah.
I just pressed it.
Before you knew the answer.
Before I knew the answer.
Yeah, you've got to do that as well.
Got to do that.
But when you, because like everyone's, if it's an obvious thing and someone, they've always got a thickie on there. When the thickie hasn't, got it, you've got to come in and that's how you.
Yeah.
This isn't how you get to marry Richard Osman, though. You get to marry Richard Osman by being all, Richard. I was too, as with everything, I was concentrating on winning and missed the main prize. Taskmaster, I won and never got any work out of it because I tried too hard. The House of Games, I've got all the stuff.
I loved it this time. I was on with Phil Wang.
Oh,
Phil's
great.
I now have a crush on. In fact, I wasn't really interested in Richmond Osman because I found him so utterly charming. And he just made such a point because his dressing room was next to mine. When I walked out, he'd go, "That's a lovely jacket, Annika." Every time. "That's another lovely jacket, Annika." And I loved that.
Phil Wang.
Yeah.
You were the co-host of Rolf Paints the Diamond Jubilee. I'd mention it.
Well, I know. I did a lot of painting programs.
You did. You're big into art. That's why I brought it up.
And I did Panto with Rolf.
Did you? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you must have crossed the... What's the word? I was going to say cross the Rubicon. That's probably the wrong... You lived through the 1980s of working in light entertainment. Yeah. It must have been a frightening time.
Not once.
Right.
Well, did anyone make a pass at me?
Wow.
Isn't that sad?
I mean, well,
it's actually not,
I think it
it's
probably,
not a badge of honour.
No, I think it is a badge of honour because they're unpleasant men who feed on weakness.
Yeah,
so you're too strong.
I'd have literally need them. Yeah. I mean, I'd have been brutal. It only happened once. And someone quite famous, very famous, took me on the pretense that he had to go back to his hotel and get something.
Right.
And so I innocently went and just stood outside and then he tried to drag me in.
Right.
And I just said, "What the fuck are you doing?" And he went, "Oh, sorry." And we carried on, went to an art exhibition. That was my only experience.
Well, that's good. I didn't really want to get into that, but well done, Annika. Congratulations. Well done for surviving. That must have been Rolf's... One of Rolf's last jobs, wasn't it? The Diamond Jubilee?
Yeah. Yeah.
Was he sweating a bit? Is he?
No, it was... oh, God. I'm not even going to go down.
Don't go there. I'm just being... I'm just seeing what I get. I got you... And we'll talk about art in a second. I got you a job.
You got me a job.
I got you a job after people come on my podcast and then they get jobs.
I got you a job.
You're on my podcast, and then Alex Horn said, heard Annika on the show, and I'd like to give me your email.
I dream of being on Taskmaster.
Yeah. I'm sure you will be.
Well, I said
that you were obviously there. I mean, you probably are. This is what happens every time. I don't know who's on Taskmaster. Someone comes and goes, oh, why haven't I been on Taskmaster? They've just recorded it. So that's what's going to happen. But it wasn't for Taskmaster, but you would obviously be amazing on Taskmaster. So they definitely will put you on if they haven't already. But the Alex Horn's sitcom...
I can't talk about the sitcom, can I?
Not? I don't know.
Because it hasn't gone out yet. Very funny.
But people know you're on that. That's pretty...
Well, I'm on it with Martin Kemp.
Oh, wow.
And we do this very funny sketch together where we're just utterly childish. And it's a complicated story, so I won't give that away. But the funny thing was, when we were filming this literally lunatic day where I'm scampering around in a jumpsuit and he's being absolutely ridiculous, his son Roman Kemp,
yes,
and my son Josh had just made this amazing suicide documentary together, which my son directed and produced. And so we just suddenly looked at each other and burst out laughing, realising that our children were being really noble and doing amazing work and tackling suicide issues. And we were running around in jumpsuits pretending to overdose on magic mushrooms. That was the premise.
Well, that's good, because you were the adult when you were a child, and now you're the adult. You're
now
adult
making
the child
up for
again.
Lost
so
time.
That's fair enough. But yeah, I mean, but it's really interesting, because obviously you took you did really well in the 90s and the 80s and the 90s, and then you took some time off for your family, really.
About 20 years,
But you've come back, and it's you're bang straight into it, getting more series. People going, we want Annika. It's you're just.
Well, do you know what? It's really. Do you know why I'm most thrilled about it? Because when 40 years ago this year, Treasure Hunt started, and that was a series where, honestly, women in television in those days, no one looks old enough to even remember, but women were not seen on television except behind a desk as a newsreader or draped over a car as a competition in a red bikini. Mm-hmm. They weren't the prize, the car was, but honestly, you wouldn't have known. And so to suddenly hit British TV screens as a woman in control, centre stage, in charge, doing Treasure Hunt...
Yeah.
Was phenomenal of its time. It was really groundbreaking, and people forget that up until that moment, women just weren't seen in that role.
Sure.
And then Challenge, you know, again, a very strong role. And a lot of women started their TV careers. We had a mainly female team, which again was really ahead of its time. You know, we had a female camera woman, again, never heard of. And it's just great to be back and to bring all that history with you and to carry on doing it, but it, you know, in a different way.
But then equally to be a middle-aged woman now, if I'm allowed to say that.
I think middle-aged, to be honest.
Well, you don't look any different, I have to say. You're still wearing a jumpsuit and you still look incredible. But, you know, it's a medium that traditionally, you know, younger women are on, and then suddenly you don't see anyone over the age of 40 on.
It is true
that are women.
So I do feel very much that it's an important thing to say I'm back and I'm doing what I do. I'm not having to do it on a sofa. You know, me and Dave the Sound Man, we're both back. We're something like 130 years between us, and nothing's changed. You know, because inside you never change, which was what I was saying about looking at elderly people earlier. Yeah. Inside you're still the same person. And, you know, good for British TV and radio for taking me at face value rather
than, well,
inside value rather than face value.
Well, yes, but I mean, still a beautiful, wonderful face, apart from the gap between the teeth, which is very off, very off-putting. It's makes me physically ill.
I know, because you can't really look at me.
I can't look at you. But if you just keep your mouth closed...
I have noticed you're really averting your gaze. I feel sorry for the people in the front row there.
It's terrible. But despite your disability of that terrible gap, you've managed to still get on TV. So, but it's because, you know, I don't think there's many people like you, and there is... You're an incredible person, and that you really wouldn't. Often when I research people, we go, oh man, they've done all this and all this. But you've really, you know, everything just seems to be like, even just like you did a piano recital in 2015, having to relearn the piano.
Oh my God, that was bloody terrifying. Someone rang me up, this concert pianist, and said, do you play the piano? And I went, no. And she said, oh, because we're looking for people to take part in this Christmas concert, famous people who play the piano. And I went, well, aged 11, does that count? And I went, okay, I'll do it. And so I had something like 6 months to learn to play the piano to concert pianist standard and then play in front of a whole room. So that was the single most terrifying thing. When I practiced, my foot on the pedal just went up and down so much, all you heard was juddering over my Grieg. And I was too shy to even ask my son's piano teacher if I could practice in front of her, because I just was utterly humiliated. I just could not remember it. And, you know, my muscle memory did not come back. And yeah. I'd only done about, you know, aged 11, I haven't learnt much up to that point. Anyway, I played in front of her with my foot trembling. I was shaking so much. I absolutely blushed with humiliation. It was truly embarrassing. And she just looked at me and she wrote on top of my thing, propranolol. And I thought, oh, that's nice. That's some sort of instruction, like go slowly. It's a beta blocker. And she said, just go and buy the bloody stuff. There's no way you're going to do this. Just take a load of bloody beta blockers. So I went and got my stash. But actually, from then on, I was fine.
Right.
It was a really weird turning point. And then I did the concert and I loved it. It was fine.
But most people would just say, no, I'm not, I can't possibly do it.
But back to Jeopardy.
Yeah.
It's back to Jeopardy,
but that's
isn't it?
That's what's extraordinary, you know. That or building an orphanage or whatever it is, just to throw yourself into something and try and do it and see what happens.
Yeah.
I suppose it's not, you know, it's not fearing failure. I mean, you obviously still were worried about failing, but it's overcoming that to some extent.
Yeah, fearing failure.
Or not, you know,
yes,
not worrying about.
Of course, you just, I've never even thought of the thought of failure. Right. Now you've planted that. I'm not going to be able to do it.
Destroyed the whole brand.
No, but I don't, it's not that I'm even confident. It's because I'm not confident, weirdly, underneath. But anyway, whatever it is, I feel that fear is there to be conquered. So that's how my brain works.
Yeah.
It goes, it's fine. You'll get there.
Okay. It's very admirable. We did mention art. You were on Would I Lie to You? And we saw a life model that.
Oh, beautiful Roy.
With. Yeah. So
beautiful Roy. Lovely Roy. We're so familiar with each other now. He'll ring the front doorbell. I say, come on in, Roy. He starts getting undressed, start naked in the kitchen, have a cup of tea. And I go, shall I set up here or should we do it in the sitting room? And I remember my builders came around once and they've got keys and they didn't know I was going to be in. And they walked in and beautiful Roy is start naked. I'm clothed with an apron on, which looked weird. And we hadn't set up the paints by that stage. So there was no context. And you need context when you've got beautiful Roy naked in your kitchen. Yeah. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense.
I mean, you shouldn't take his clothes off until you've set up the paints, I would say.
No, but that's how, you know, it's fine. It just cracks on. We just crack on with it. Yeah. Anyway, he took part on Would I Lie to You? You know, they have a round where someone comes on as the mystery guest and you have to explain why you... It's still the funniest thing I've ever done. I mean, not that I was being funny. It was everyone around it. It was just hysterical because... Yeah.
But you were good at lying as well. There was a round where you had to lie.
Love a lie. I can lie about anything.
Yeah. But yeah. That's a hard thing to do.
Yeah. I'm very good at lying. Because, well, I'm very good at elaborating rather than lying. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you did. It was, because it was the kind of thing you think, oh, it sounds too made up. But then you kind of think, well, would that be? But you were so, you know, worryingly good at lying for someone who does so much good. You know, if you want to do a terrorist atrocity, that's all I'm saying. Then you can Forget about the jumpsuit. So, but the art is very... You're very good at art. And
no, I'm not. No, but again, I just enjoy it. And again, with art, I paint. I have the most coveted place with Maggie Hambling, who's probably our greatest living artist. She is my mentor now. And what happened was that I was doing an interview with her, and she chain smokes. Do you all know Maggie Hambling? Have you heard of her? She does very controversial art, and she's amazing. She's now in her 70s. She chain smokes. She tells everyone to fuck off, and she's really outspoken. And look her up. She's incredible. Anyway, I went to interview her, and then she said, "Can you all fuck off now, you film crew? Because I've got to get ready for my masterclass," because she has this amazing masterclass of about 12 painters. And I just looked at her for ages and said, "Can I come?" And I mean, I just was not qualified to go to this masterclass. Anyway, she looked at me for about 10 minutes and then just wrote down on a piece of paper, 10 o'clock, bring charcoal. And I've been part of the gang ever since. But again, if I hadn't done that, it's what I'm, you know, you've got to put yourself into weird situations,
yeah,
and for the odd thing to stick. And that group I paint with is truly my tribe that I will go through life with. I love that group of painters.
Yeah. But you know, that's, you do put yourself into these places, and you know, people, there is something about you that makes someone go, "Yeah, okay, yeah, you can come to my masterclass without having checked whether you can draw."
Paint?
I mean, I could have said that. Can I come? They're going, "Oh, yeah, I can't really come and do art."
But as it happens, every class has got to have the class clown. So I'm happy to be the class clown. So Maggie will just go, "Where's the fucking head, Rice?" Because she calls me Rice. It's kind of weird. I kind of like the abuse, but you know, there's a lot of humanity there as well, and we're a very close group. Very close group.
All right, and I want to know, before we finish, having listened to your philosophical series about, you know, and listened to talking about death, what do you think? I mean, your death is going to be a long way away for you, Annika. I know that for sure. But what do you think happens to you after you've died, Annika? I would like to know what happens.
Oh, God, wouldn't it be nice to imagine something marvellous?
Yeah.
But I can't. I don't. I don't have those thoughts.
Do you think it's just game over?
Yeah.
That's good.
Worms.
I agree. I mean, you're right. You're definitely right. But yeah. I thought you might.
I'd love to think differently.
What?
You know, all those years I bloody was in the church choir and did three weddings on a Saturday singing away. You know, did the solo.
All for nothing, Annika.
All for nothing.
Because there is no God.
Suddenly that religion just seeped away and I thought, what is that all about? And I just wish I didn't, because I'd love to be a believer in something. But I kind of believe in a bigger thing. I suppose it's more sort of spiritual.
Yeah.
I like to worship the sun and the moon and the tides.
But it's worship. You know, it's making the most of being alive. It doesn't matter what comes afterwards. Hopefully it's nothing, because it would be awful to go on forever.
I'd be really sad if you and I have said this and then everyone else who's a believer, they're all on a sun lounger.
Yeah.
With someone really nice that they wanted to hang out with.
Yeah.
And we are just sawdust.
My parents are Christian, and I spent my whole life trying to convince them not to be religious so that they'll believe their whole life, and then and just before they die, they go, "Yeah, you are right," and then they'll end up in hell. That's my hope. Because you can do the opposite, can't you? You can be bad all your life and they go, "Oh, yeah, I do believe in God. Sorry about the stuff
but
I did."
Yeah, you can't do it last minute, I don't think it works.
That's the whole point.
That's the whole point of religion. Like,
but it'd be much better the other way around when you spend your whole life being good and then going, "No, I denounce Jesus Christ."
But I do a lot of work with the Marie Curie, the charity, and they send nurses out with end-of-life patients. They're an amazing charity. And I talk to them a lot, especially when I was researching death, one of my issues. And they said it is very interesting seeing believers facing death in their last few days. This is cheerful, this conversation.
It's all right,
it's going very well, isn't it?
We've got to an hour, you can get serious.
Okay, they said it's really interesting because the people who believe have just such a sort of calm about them because what the hell? They're off on an adventure. They're off on their gap year. And, you know, you and I...
Yeah. I'm happy. I'm happy to go. My grandma went through all of the Alzheimer's stuff that you talk about in the Alzheimer's one, and you know, your you're very honest about it with your father, and you say that, you know, there was a point where you considered...
I did try and kill him.
Yeah. I mean, I thought about it.
Yeah. I really did think about it when he was in
hospital.
And it
really makes sense because you're absolutely, you know, that when... I think my Jungian thing is when I wake up in the middle of the night, I worry that I'm already in a hospice and this is my only memory as I'm reliving my life.
But the thing is also, which I touch on in my thing, is that I'm sure all of you have parents who at some stage have said to you, never let me be that person in that care home. Get rid of me before that happens. There's a lot of years going. The front row's amazing, aren't they? They've just been absolutely on point throughout the whole
thing.
They're
very nice people who want to kill their parents.
But that's all my parents said to me all through my memory of childhood and right the way through. Never let me be that person in a care home. And then the time comes and you feel such guilt that you're not doing the right thing by them.
Yeah.
So terribly dark thoughts, you know, you do have them.
It's interesting and it is normal and it should, we should be allowed to act on, I mean, not with a pillow necessarily, but we should be able to, because it's not a dignified way to go. And there's sort of keeping people alive.
Well, used to say, I wouldn't mind going next Tuesday. And once his carer, Mark, saved his life. He was choking on chocolate. And he said to me, oh, Annie, I've saved your dad's life. He was choking on chocolate. And it took all my, you know, everything to go, oh, well done, Mark. That's amazing. Thank you so much. I was gutted because my dad would have loved death by chocolate as his epitaph. So, yeah.
But I think, you know, again, discussing
it's cheery,
that,
this, isn't
but
it?
But you discussed it in your show, and your show's a comedy show, and I think, you know, it is also important to talk about serious issues. And that story is, you know, that story is a very funny story about you wishing your dad had died. But it's also a funny joke. And so it's, you know, I think those things, we need to talk about them because we're all going to live longer. And what I don't, there's no point in it if you're not you, you know. So
point at all. I think people should be able to do a living will at this stage and go, this is the point at which you can get rid of me.
Yeah. Good. Well, lovely. You do. I've got a pillow backstage, Annika, and I'm going to take that out of context. She didn't have anything to live for. I mean, it just makes me wonder how, if there are people who work in homes, it must happen a lot, right? And they must just go, oh, yeah, they died. It must happen a lot. Must happen
is
all
this
the time.
Actually a comedy podcast?
It is. It's an everything podcast.
No, but it is dark. Death is dark, and it's funny. You know, it can be. I mean, my sister and I sat on my dad's bed while he was still alive, but it was the last day because he'd been given a lethal injection of some kind, and so he was very out of it. And we planned his funeral sitting on his bed, and we'd ring up the funeral parlour and say, so yeah, what we'd like, and they'd go, oh, I'm so sad to hear about his passing. We went, no, he hasn't died yet, but it'll probably be this afternoon sometime. But you know, it was my sister and I, we just went into that sort of mode of organisation, and we did it lying on my dad's bed with him completely out of it. It was very surreal. As I say it, I'm thinking, have I gone too far?
No, you've said it in your show, and you know, and you point out all that. There's comedy in everything, and it's about family, and you know, and
it's
where
it's about love.
It's about love.
You
it's
do just, this
absolutely.
Through love, don't you?
Absolutely.
You want? I was going to say you kill through love. No, but you it's all done from a position of love.
It is, and there still is a lot of funny things, you know, about. You tell a lot of funny stories about your dad not knowing what your name was, but thinking you were called Dulux and things like that. Yeah. So it's
because we used to look at paint swatches the whole time when he had dementia because he couldn't really remember anything. So we'd go, oh, look, I'd have my Dulux paint swatches, and I'd go, that yellow would be lovely for a tie, and blue dressing gown. And we'd honestly spend hours doing this. And then one day I just said to him, Dad, what do you think my name is? And he just looked at me and went, Dulux? And it was such a lovely moment. I want to actually be called Dulux.
We'll call you Dulux. Challenge Annika, is it out? Is it out next year?
Next year.
Yeah, fantastic. And are you going to do more stand-up?
Yeah, I would love to.
Yeah.
I would really love to.
I mean,
to
you're
going to
be too, the problem is you're going to get too successful, be on TV all the time and not be able to do stand up.
No,
that's
no,
the
no,
problem
no.
with stand up comedians.
No. I want to just, I'd like to just do a few. I so enjoyed going away with Lucy Porter. That was the highlight of my life.
Not all comedians are as nice as Lucy
Porter.
Are they
not? No. Yeah. She so did tell me some quite dark stories. Now you mention it.
She's very nice.
We did have a lovely time, really lovely time.
Well, it's so lovely to meet you, Annika. I'm a lifelong fan and you know,
CBTV. I've never met anyone who ever watched that.
Yeah, it was very funny.
It was quite out there because it was ITV, wasn't it?
And children's ITV.
Yeah, but on BBC you could have watched Blue Peter, which was safer. And we were the sort of slightly subversive, children's magazine programme on the other side.
That's what it is. Tiz was fantastic as well. But yeah, I do remember that show. It was
wow.
Well, look, good luck with whatever comes next. I know you're going to be taking on fantastic challenges for many years to come. And as I say, absolutely incredible human being. Ladies and gentlemen, the amazing Annika Rice. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Richard. Do we go now?
You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Annika Rice. Thank you very much to Scant Regard for playing the music of this podcast finale. Thank you very much to them. I'm indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. Thank you very much to Chris Evans, not that one, and all of the team from Go Faster Stripe and Sky Potato Productions. Thank you to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre for having us. And that's all the people I want to thank today. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Head to GoFasterStripe.com. You can buy my book, Can I Have My Ball Back? If you look in there, GoFasterStripe.com/ball.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.